Hello, my name is Peter Cinnamond, and you've just checked yourself into a podcast all about the Irish League. I might not have got myself a new investor or the cash to go full time, but what I do have is some opinions on everything that went down in Northern Irish football this week, where Glenavon won out in the battle at the basement to secure their first win of the season, leaving Ballymena wondering what that must feel like. Niall McGinn secured the points as the Glens got their first top six victory at home this season, and Linfield bounced back in Corrien in a brand new flashy kit that you can't buy after they realised that there's actually two teams in this league that play in blue and white. Bummer. Add in Northern Ireland's attempt to get back on track in European qualifying Group H, and we've got ourselves plenty to cover on this week's special 50th podcast edition of Kickin' Match. And here we are. I have brought him back. He has returned to Chateau Cinnamon. He's got a warm beverage with him, and he's got, as usual, fire in his soul. Hello and welcome back, football commentator Michael Clark. Hello.
Hello. Loving the introduction, Peter. Thank you very much for having me back in your humble abode.
Well, it's the mini big one. I know we're not there at triple figures just yet, but as I looked at my tally of episodes, episode 50, I said to you, we couldn't make a return to the preview episode, but I brought you in for this big one, and I don't have too much pomp and circumstance here with this one, but you know, this podcast in many ways wouldn't have got rocking and rolling if it wasn't for yourself. You giving me time. There is one or two lost episodes, which people will never know, where it was you sitting here going through it. And now here we are, as they say, 49, now 50 episodes in. Can you believe it? If we went back to episode one, that I'd be telling you that we'd have a top six, that's Linfield. And we'd have a bottom six, and there'd be part-time teams. The one thing, if we went back, whatever it is, 12, 13 months ago, that probably would have been the biggest change, is that we've got two new investors. Mm. One of them being a Michael Smith of Carrick Rangers, a man you talked to on your podcast, The Score, last week. And I'm going to go straight to Carrick and their game on Friday, a game that you were at, a game where, for Carrick, they had probably their lowest low, and they were rising up from getting up to a decent high after that 3-3 against Linfield. And for them, they would have hoped to continue that high, and they were able to get there eventually. A big win for Stuart King after what's been an up and down rocky season. And it's Dungannon leaving it late again, leaving it late to shoot themselves in the foot. We'll start with the Carrick side of things, 2-1. I think they needed this victory there on Friday.
Yeah, they did. And there was that sense coming in to win this game and feel a little bit better about where you are in the season. People, every year, we all get drawn into, you know, probably a lot of hyperbole around things, and they have to win and they cannot lose and whatever. That's how we all feel as supporters. But the reality is there's plenty of time to do these things and to correct problems. Carrick Rangers have, on the face of it, you know, if you said they were going to lose to Cliftonville and Crusaders, nobody would have batted an eyelid before the season. It's how they lost to those two teams. Linfield showed us that there is a character there, that there is a bit of progress in the Carrick Rangers side, and people were especially looking at Danny Perkis and thinking, right, when's his goals going to kick in? So he got the two there, and that'll do his confidence the world of good, because he had such a good pre-season. But this Dungannon Swifts game is a game where, a bit like the home game that they lost at the very start of the season against Newry City, people are saying, well, are you going to win this one then? Are you going to show us that you're this team that's capable of going the right direction? And it wasn't a classic game of football by any stretch of the imagination. It's not going to be one that people watch back again and again. But they got the result. And I will say, with a little bit of luck, because David Cushley should have been sent off in the first half.
So you've got the first question I was going to ask you straight away. So you talked about it on the broadcast. Con Coates thought he should have been sent off. You agree with that sentiment?
Yeah, definitely. What I'll always try and do on commentary is allow my co-commentator to take the lead on what should happen on a football pitch, where I'll sometimes step in as if there's maybe room for an explanation around the laws of the game or something like that, because they're changing all the time and we're trying to get to grips with what to expect from referees. And to be honest, there's an element of everyone, including myself, feeling a little confused about what they're asking the referees to do, insofar as some weeks it seems a bit heavy-handed from our officials. Other weeks it's very old school, and as if Mike Riley and IFAB haven't had conversations with them this year. So it's a little difficult, but for me, there's no question. Tony Clark should have shown the red card. He was in a great position. I'm not sure why he didn't. He showed a yellow card at the time for Cushley, and Carrick Rangers ultimately benefited from that because Cushley would step up and score the winning penalty. I actually, after the game, joked to Stuart King about it. Not even about the sending off, because in my mind, there's no joke there. That's just very clear what should have happened. That Stuart tends to sub Cushley off before that stage in the game. So I was saying, you know, set aside the referee indecision for a moment. You normally hook him by then, and what would you have done if you'd have got a penalty? You know, who's taking it then? Now, they've other good players, but Cushley's long since established himself as the guy for that situation at Carrick Rangers. So, well, he scored the goal and then they made the change.
And to get that goal, it's a penalty. It's late on. It's post 90 minutes, when usually that's when Dungannon and Swift's come alive. It wasn't the case this time around. It comes from a corner where it's Kyle Cherry coming out for the ball, and it's kind of a coming together. It's one of those things where I don't know if I saw it for the first time, I would go instantly, that's a penalty. I would kind of be confused. It somewhat reminds me of that, was it Warren Point that was involved, where there's a clattering near that part of the box on the last day of the season, or if I'm just referencing something weird.
I'm trying to think. There was one a few years ago.
Yeah.
Are you talking about the one between Dungannon and Warren Point and the penalty that never should have been?
Yes, there was a bit of a clattering. Yeah. It was a bit like that. When you slow it down, you can see there's a clipping, and that's tough for Dungannon to take.
This one was a penalty, though, because Kyle Cherry's foot, I think, is swollen enough for everyone to see the evidence. Ethan Devine is a forward, and he just wants to boot the ball as far away from his own penalty box as he can. Cherry gets a little touch and he gets booted in the foot and he goes flying. And that's as simple as that. And, you know, it was a really good penalty. Niall Morgan rightly getting the plaudits, because I think it was like his second game in 2 years or something like that in the Irish League. You know, he just steps in and all of a sudden is able to be a very good goalkeeper. Now, I know, yes, okay, maybe, you know, in his commitment to the GAA, he's being a goalkeeper, he doesn't maybe feel it's too big of a change or whatever, but I just thought he looked really, really good. And Carrick Rangers were thinking to themselves, we should be a few goals up here. Are we going to get the winner because of Niall Morgan?
He was there making some really big saves. You can see that even in the highlights. And Carrick did have plenty of chances. I'm also thinking about the Curtis Allen header that really should have found the back of the net as well. And I think this is why a lot of people were hyping up this Carrick team before the start of the season, me being one of those people on the bandwagon. It's because you can see they have so many of these a great, skillful players who have been there, done that. And yes, they haven't all clicked together completely this season. But hopefully, when you combine the 3-3 against Linfield with this late win against Dungannon, they can now push on. For Dungannon, it's another loss, and they are down near the bottom of the table. It feels as though their performances, when you put them in one big hole, you sit there and think, surely they've got more than just the 2 points.
Yeah.
They just haven't got over that hump. And I'm sure Roddy McAvee was looking at this game where this is a chance to get more than just a point and a victory, and they come out with nothing. They'll feel frustrated with that slightly.
It's partly how we perceive Dungannon Swifts is potentially the problem, because everyone says, well done for unscrambling eggs, and that's it. You know, you go 2-0 down and you draw 2-2. Well done. That's only a point. You're in a game where you're 4-1 down and you finish 4-4. Well done. You know, you haven't been beaten. It's only a point. And each, especially the 4-4, given they were against the champions, away to the champions especially, you know, on match day one, that was incredible. I'm not saying that, but you don't want to be 2 or 3 goals behind before you start scoring the goals yourself. You can't keep going behind in games. So that's the problem here. They go behind, they find their way back into it. You know, is that going to be the pattern every week? This time, you know, they've got the own goal against them, so it's a little unfortunate. But they never really established themselves over the course of the match. I thought they looked really nervous. And Rodney McAree, after the match, was saying nothing about the red card appeal and everything about where was the fight, where was the performance, what was that? And he's annoyed because he wants his teams to go out and play nice football. Not even nice football. He wants to go out and play a certain way and assert themselves from the beginning. He doesn't want it to be go behind and get a shot in the arm. And that is a concern at the moment, that they aren't able to do that.
Well, he clearly felt as though his team wasn't complete in August. That's why he went out and brought even more players in. He made that decision a couple of weeks ago to bring in a new keeper. Mm-hmm. albeit front. Yeah, you know.
They're well resourced in that department now, aren't they? Because they've Connor Mitchell as well as Declan Dunne.
Yeah, and Mitchell's currently dealing with an injury. He would have felt that was his maybe his time to step up. But, you know, he's made a change there on deadline day. They bring in Thomas Maguire. I think that's a real savvy signing to get over the line. And then we'll just have to see what Bigorama returning to the league, what will he offer? He can be, sometimes might feel like a luxury player for a team like Dungannon, but he was around the Glentoran setup, so he's bringing in a player he knows there. We all know what their aims are this season. It's just in the same way where it felt as though it wasn't clicking for Carrick, it just isn't clicking for Dungannon. The one thing they'll be positive about is Joe Murr, who didn't, you know, use the word impose himself on this game. He wasn't able to impose himself on this team last season. He is one of the bright sparks where he is he's using that pace to get goals.
Yeah, I like him. I mean, in fairness as well, Rhys Campbell's out. Darren McBrien was sold to Linfield. They have James Knowles out. You could go through and pick out influential players, and it's not a secret that when you're a team in the bottom half of the table, you can't afford as many of those players to be missing as if you are one of the big teams in the league with greater squad depth. So there are, I guess, mitigating factors there, but they're going to want to try and just look a little bit more solid. First of all, you know, the Loch All games, or Loch All actually in themselves, are a good example of that. You can't say that they're a team with an abundance of resources compared to the sides they're coming up against. I had a little feeling they were going to do something against Crusaders and tried as gently and as subtly as possible to hint that on Friday night, because I thought equally that sounds ridiculous when I hear myself say it, but they did. And they have shown teams how you go about it by being very well organised, and they haven't brought in as many players as other teams have, and they didn't start with a Premiership squad like other teams have. But they're ticking along rightly.
Great transition there, Michael. We all have notions in this game. And I must say, I did not join you in that feeling that Loch All could get anything against Crusaders, a Crusaders side who were red hot. They have a slight stumble, and some people would say a tiny bit of luck then against Glentoran midweek. But at home at Seaview, they usually are as good as gold, particularly against a team who's just in the league. But this Loch All side is getting all their points away from home. They play almost without fear. They look pretty solid at the back. And what's even more impressive about this performance is not only are they able to restrict Crusaders just to one goal at home, and they really rode the wave at times in that game, but they get their goal late-ish on when they're down to 10 men. When I heard that not only have Crusaders finally broken the deadlock, but now Loch All are down to 10 men, you're sitting there going, well, you can write your report now, you know, brush your hands off, it's all over. But they fought back, and my goodness, and he rightfully would be, Stephen Baxter was just furious post-match.
Yeah, well, if you're Crusaders, you are looking at that and saying that's 2 points dropped. We have had such a good start to the season. We've got out of jail against Glentoran, and not that a point at the Oval's bad, but just how that match was going in general. Got out of jail, go and win your next match, and, you know, keep that commanding position, or commanding start to the season at least. Not what happened. And yeah, everybody thought as soon as Crusaders go 1-0 up, well, they'll probably add another goal or two and that'll be that. But credit to Loch All and their temperament, they're not going to be taking as mugs this season. I think Dean Smith's a really good manager. What's interesting actually is that one of their analysts is the same analyst that the Uruguay national team use, one of Marcelo Bielsa's analysts, and he does it remotely.
Yes, I heard this.
So he looks at everybody, weighs up their scores, they have a point system, and feeds it back to Loch All. And whether that's, you know, really helping them, it certainly isn't hurting them at the moment. They're a shrewd bunch, you know, and look, who knows? Because they could do well right up to Christmas and it could all fall to pieces. So you can't count your chickens. There's lots more points they need to get on the board before they can feel safe. But they can feel very proud about how they started, because most times the team that comes up are assumed to be whipping boys, and they haven't been whipped too handily.
What's impressed me about them is how much they work as a team. It feels like they're all a key cog. I don't want to venture towards the realm of Moneyball. I think what we're finding here is a team that's being crafted, and perhaps when we look back at this 11-15 squad, this panel of players, we'll go, oh my goodness, look at all these top end Irish League players that were in this side, and we didn't realize it. You know, Baxter said he loved Benji McGee when he came on. You know, perhaps this is the start of long top end Irish League careers for a lot of these players, which is in this team, and we just don't know it yet.
Who knows? But there's Irish League experience in there, and the likes of Caelan Loughran, and he was unlucky with a set piece. I like the defensive.
Oh, like, he whacked that ball. That would have been an amazing goal. He must have hit it from like 30, 40 yards.
He has that in him, doesn't he, Caelan? I don't know what the dance moves would have been like afterwards. His goal celebrations have been a wee bit questionable. But yeah, he very nearly came off with a cracker. But I like Murdoch and Cartwright as a defensive partnership. I think they're very solid. They've got that time playing together where they seem to have good knowledge of where each other's going to be. And they don't panic. And it's a step up. It's a massive step up coming into the Premiership. And to still look like, okay, we have a bit of time, or you can deal with that. Okay, good. That's amazing.
Well, not that I want to remind you, the last team that went in to Seaview a week ago, or just over a week ago, conceded 9.
Yeah.
So the fact that it was only one and they were able to get a point, he will use that for the rest of the season. And they look so solid and strong. To go back to Crusaders, they have plenty of chances. David Heatley had a whole bunch that he just wasn't able to convert. And perhaps something like this was always going to come when they were steamrolling everybody. They feel as though they will accept their point against Glentoran. And perhaps, I don't know, but perhaps they just thought that Lockall at home will get the goal and away we go. And it was a really nice, swift move from one end of the pitch to the other for the Lockall goal. But I would not like to have been Daniel Larmour going in at the end of the game, because he just, between him and Tuffy, that was a disappointing goal to let go in that situation.
It's a difficult one because you get made to look a fool off, but Benji McGee absolutely roasts him, doesn't he? He flicks the ball over him, has the pace to get him behind, it forces the keeper to come out, and then maybe two bounces and he just lifts it over him into the far top corner. It's a great finish. I don't want to take anything away from the goal because it's such quality. And to be fair, Daniel Larmour has had a brilliant start to the season, scored goals in his last couple of games.
He has, yeah.
From defence. I actually, before the Glentoran game, said to him, I'm looking forward to your goal celebration tonight when you score again. Completely tongue-in-cheek. And then he scored and I thought, well, I can't really mention that in commentary because someone will take it the wrong way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because I genuinely don't care who wins these games. And when it's Carrick Rangers, deep down, yes, I do. But I try to not let that ever come across. But yeah, he scored in his last couple of matches. I think he's been playing really well. He just got caught out in one instance and they got punished for it. The guy still had to sprint in behind him and lob Johnny Tuffy. So sometimes you just have to applaud a good goal. When it costs you a game, people are quick to then go, oh, well, it's his fault or this shouldn't have happened or that. But I don't really think they need the post-mortem. They just need to not let it happen again next time and go and perform at their usual levels, because I think they were subpar from what I've heard of the game. Obviously, I was elsewhere, but from what I've heard, they were not really at it. Whether they were tired from Tuesday or a bit complacent, either way, the thing that cost them was that, ultimately, as a team, they didn't show up and therefore they didn't win.
Sometimes you have to have those mistakes and not a big spot to learn your lesson, where when it's really on the line, when the big games really matter, you can look back. But what they've lost is a bit of slack, and I'm sure that's what will frustrate Stephen Baxter more than anything. But look, let's not overanalyze it too much. It's a frustrating day at the office. These will come and they will move on. Looking elsewhere around the top end of the league, it was a big fixture going into the weekend. Glentoran hosting Cliftonville. This is a oval which had seen Larne come into town, take away the points. You have Crusaders come in, steal a point, I would say. I think many Glentoran fans would feel when they were 2-1 up cruising. We all know about this red card, and then they can see the goal later on. And these home games are vital at the top of the table if you're going for the title, and that's clearly what Glentoran are doing. And again, they just seem to chug along. On comes McGinn, a player who isn't getting the starting time that he would like, and he does bits in the box and he secures the 3 points for Glentoran. I think this is a really big statement win for them. And I think for McGinn, it's a statement from him to his manager. I know I'm a veteran here, but I still want to be starting.
And let's see, does he start the next game? There's no questioning Niall McGinn's ability, but sometimes people say, well, that'll guarantee me a start in the next match. It might just make the manager think,
He's a great player off the bench.
Very effective off the bench, that boy.
Impact sub.
Yeah, you know, Niall, you're 36 now. We'll just give you 30 minutes and you can be the best player on the pitch for 30 minutes every week. Can you do that for 90 minutes? No, he still says there's life in the legs. I'm not saying he can't do it, but we'll see how Warren Feeney chooses to use him. What a goal. Wonderful. Sent the defender to the shops. And then he's still in a cute angle. That's the thing that I think people aren't really mentioning. Everyone's focusing on the wee shimmy. It's still really hard to find that corner with a goalkeeper standing in front of you. And he just does it so easily. He scored that type of goal before. And he'll probably score that type of goal again. But it was magical. And Cliftonville carved open. And they'll be probably reflecting on games against the big teams that they haven't got enough points from at this early stage in the season. You know, going to Windsor Park, losing 2-1. Home against Larne, drawing. Away to Glentoran, losing. And we know you play each other plenty of times. You can correct that, but it's not the start of the season they want. For a team that's actually played some of the best football in the league, they'll be looking at the points tally and going, oh, right, okay. We need to be a wee bit better at making sure that we don't lose these matches.
Six played. They had an amazing start, 3 wins. Now they are winless in 3, but they are playing these big games, the big tests that they knew were coming. It felt like an even affair going back and forward. Oftentimes these games are chess matches, and it is just that one little move. You have the ability to stick on McGinn, and I'm sure there's plenty of Cliftonville fans who are saying, hold on a second, no Gormley, no Curran, we're still trying to figure it out.
No Hale.
Exactly. And they did have the great start, but now when these games come in, the one thing about it is that the game against Linfield, I don't think that they were ever out of, and I thought were the better side in the first half. And the one thing that I feel as though I haven't reflected, particularly with Glentoran, and it should be the same for Cliftonville, is that these are new managers bringing new ideas with a couple of new players, and that doesn't always click straight away. And it is just a shimmy here, a leg in the way, where it could just be up the other end of the pitch and they're the team with the points. The one positive, I think, for Cliftonville is that they have at least been able to shut up shop. The big criticism I had going into the season, that I thought there was a really worrying trend with their defensive record. They haven't got a result in 3 games, but they're not letting the goals fly in the other end either.
No, and it's the games between the big teams, if you want to call it that, are all being settled by a goal here, a goal there. And so it's very hard to judge them fully at this stage, I would say, yet. Once we've seen everybody play each other once, maybe then we can start to form stronger opinions. I know we're going to come on to them, but Linfield being able to grind out results to me is impressive, even if they haven't been the most impressive team. You know, it's one of those strange ones in terms of how you look at things, because you're trying to project that onto, okay, but factor every fixture in, which feels more sustainable. And Cliftonville are looking at it and going, we're playing nice football, we're quite progressive, we're moving a lot, we're doing all these things right, but we're being beaten in the matches that we need to start taking points from, which is against the teams that are going to be up and around us in the top half. So you can't be fully pleased, and there's something to try and improve there. And the question will be whether they can, whether they have that grit when it comes to the big games. That'll be the question mark that goes beside them. And maybe when you start to get players return, it'll become more apparent. It'll certainly be more of a headache for Jim Magilton when he tries to figure out, you know, which of the 5 forwards he wants to play.
Is that not where someone interjects and says, that's the right kind of headache?
That's a great kind of headache to have.
I know I'm not the first person to use long distance running as an analogy for a football season, but when I look at particularly the top five as we currently have in the league, and more so the top four.
Oh, you're not saying top six just because it's Loch Awe that are six?
Loch Awe.
Anti-Loch Awe.
Well, I'm trying to establish the term the established top six. That's okay. What I think we can start talking about.
If Corain weren't on -2 goal difference and they were on +3, they'd be sixth. Would you talk about top six then?
We should all be talking about Loch Awe for Europe right now, you know, so it is that 2 goals difference. I think that also speaks a wee bit of the way Corain have been going so far this season. But We look at all these teams right now after the 6 games, and it is only the opening starting bit, but to compare it to long distance running, it's to a certain extent, just because you shoot off early, it's like, you know, this is like the first kilometer or the first 2 miles. You can kind of do it in any way, but eventually you'll all get yourself to where you're going to be. This is where we're starting to just slightly see a little Pentaton, and we're now flipping into cycling, emerge at the top, which is the usual players. One thing about Linfield, and going on to the Linfield game up at Coleraine, they're playing very angry. Does that make sense? They're playing with an intensity so far, which we'll have to see if it can keep on going, but it's really working out for them. 5 wins out of 6, only the 1 draw. Like, they are a whisker away from really being 6-for-6. And I think with them, for a team which in recent years have often been looked at more of a collection of really top players, I think what we're seeing this season is that we're seeing some, in the Irish League terms, some elite players really come to the fore. Cooper's having one of the best seasons, I think, of his career. McKee is the striker they've been crying out for a couple of years. And they're probably conceding a bit too many than what they would like. But I think Cal McLean's had a brilliant start to the season. And they're stepping up. And there's a lot more individual goals and individual performances than what we're used to from Linfield.
And Fallon's back as well. I think that's going to be a huge lift.
Huge.
So we're going to see how much East can help their defence as well. I mean, every Linfield fan on the internet's been saying, we need a defender. So they've got one. So let's see if that does it. But yes, looking at it, they beat Dungannon.
Was there no defenders called South? Because they would have loved that.
Maybe in the next window. And then they can say things have gone south if it doesn't work out. They beat Dungannon Swifts by a goal. They beat Ballymena United by a goal. They, 4-2 against Glenavon was a bit of a basket case match. Cliftonville 2-1 looks more impressive on the face of it, especially in the fact that they went and scored so quickly after conceding in that one. Then it's the 3-3 against Carrick, and then it's the win that we're talking about against Coleraine. So that's why I'm saying grinding out. They probably are angry because they didn't win the league last year, and that's not allowed if you're Linfield. It's just against the rules, and they probably feel underappreciated. And, Larne win the league, and there's still people going, oh, well, Linfield weren't great last year, And that's the reason why anyone else wins the league, because Linfield weren't great last year. And it doesn't do anyone justice, really. Linfield, when they win the league, it's always because you're the best team. That's why you win those leagues. Larne were the best team last season. And so for me, Friday the 15th at Inver Park, champions versus challengers, there's a game to see how much grit, how much improvement is in this Linfield team. Can they go to the home of the defending champions and go and win the match? Because it's been a place where they've struggled, and Larne maybe haven't had the perfect start, but beat Linfield, and all of a sudden it's like, oh look, they're back up there, and that'll be them motoring. I think, when it comes to predictions, you're not going to win any prizes for saying Larne and Linfield are the two favourites for the league, and then Glentoran, who make a habit of finishing third, are going to be probably the third team, and then after that take your pick of Crusaders and Cliftonville. That's where the league is expected to finish. It's teams' jobs to make sure that they put themselves higher in the bracket than what I'm describing.
Talking about expectancy, is Coleraine just expected to be sixth now? Is this what's happening? I think after moments of real excitement, they're starting to fall back down into the mean. I think I'm probably comparing them a wee bit too much to last season, where we saw this thrilling start that then fell away, and they haven't got off to the same start as last season. Look, they're without Shevlin. I think this current team is a bit more experimental, and at least they've thrown themselves at Linfield. They've got caught. They were able to get a point against Larne at home. It's just been one of those things where 2-2-2 after 6 isn't great, but they'll want to almost do what Linfield are usually good at: find their rhythm, find their flow, and start getting on a bit of a run. I think this is a team who could really do with a bit of a run to see what they're truly made of.
And they're prone to a bit of a run.
Yeah.
They're a team that can go on a good stretch of matches not losing. They're also a team that can go on a stretch of games without winning. They're frustratingly unpredictable at times, and I hesitate to use the word toothless, but they can be a bit toothless. They need to change that up and be ruthless. Hey, wordplay. They need to have other people chipping in with the goals more frequently. We can sit here and go, Cliftonville are quite good and Coleraine are a bit crap. There's 2 points between them. Mm. So, you know, a weekend's fixtures and all of a sudden, oh, Korean, they're back in it and look at them, they're up the table and they're ahead of these guys and da-da-da. That's why I really, as much as I have a gut feeling, which is Cliftonville are in a better place than Korean, and I think Korean could struggle insofar as, I don't think they'll struggle to be top six. I think that'll sort itself out and they'll be top six. I think they could struggle if they're going to try and finish fourth or higher. I just don't see that for them right now. And look, I hope they prove me wrong. That investment in the next couple of years might be able to allow them to address a few things. But the full-time teams and the teams that are on that hybrid model are pulling away from the rest of the league at the moment. And it, to me, it looks quite evident.
Do you think this investment could find an all-encompassing cure for Stephen Loring? Because I think that's probably what they're missing. If they can, I know they missed him for long stretches last season.
You think
season.
They're going to invest in cryogenesis?
Yes, absolutely. If they can sort out this lower leg injury that he's had since maybe the second game of the season, that might be one of the ways to make this work. Because I think you're absolutely right. I highlight all these wonderful attacking players. They had Shevlin back in that game. McKendry, you see what Scott can do. Lee Lynch progresses the ball. Jimmy Glacken always has a highlight play in him. And then you have McDade doing bits up top. Beyond that, who is doing the dirty work? Who's doing the dark arts? I know Lyndon Keane is really highly rated, but perhaps that's what they're... I know you can't... Every team can't have a Sule, but my goodness, would they not be... benefit massively from a player like that. And look, Linfield coming to town, you're not going to always hope and get the points that you want, but I think that was an impressive performance from Linfield as they move on.
Well, Corrine have got, you know, they played six and scored seven. That's the same record as Carrick Rangers at the moment. So if they want to try and compare themselves to the other teams, Linfield have scored 16, Crusaders 20. Now, the Glens have scored 8, but their attack has come under criticism too. But their defence is much better, so they get away with that then. Larne have scored 14, Cliftonville have scored 12, Loch All have scored 9. So you can... Dungannon's obviously the outlier because they've scored 10, but they're rock bottom. But that's, again, their defence. The best teams need to have more goals and they need to concede fewer goals. It's common sense.
Well, a team who really added to their goal difference this weekend was Larne, a team that I've questioned a wee bit in recent times going forward. They invest so much player capital in this defence, and it's an area that they've needed to invest in because they've had so many players being crocked. But it was defenders that seemed to come to the fore and get all these goals. 2 for Levi Eyes against
playing
Murray
off the
home.
Right as well,
and,
hey?
Yeah, and you had Micheál Glynn, who's always good for a goal. And then when you haven't got Ryan, who steps up? Paul O'Neill, we talk about playing angry. That's a man who'll be playing with the bit between his teeth, saying, I want to get back in this team and I want to be starting every week. And you're going to do that by getting the goals. Lauren blitzed Newry, particularly near the ending phases of that first half, and that's the type of performance they'll want. I feel like they go into these games, win one or two, and I'll be happy with it. I've talked a lot about how last season it felt as though Larne were very efficient in their way to winning the title. A good old blitz, I think, helps build the confidence in a team and gives fans that belief that actually we are definitely one of the best teams in the league and we will give anybody a game and we can puff our chest out and beat it and say we are the champions, hear us roar. Different animals combined there. But look, a disappointing loss for Newry, who have been up and down so far this season. But I thought that Larne looked, for the first time this season, electric going forward.
Well, Newry have broken their little habit because what they were doing was winning every other game, and now that pattern's gone. So there we are. I am looking forward to seeing, because I didn't get to see him at the weekend, Haziel Orozco, the player that's coming on loan from Real Salt Lake. He has the distinction of being their youngest ever player in the MLS, breaking a record that was previously held by Freddie Adu, who everybody once upon a time.
Yes.
Yeah. And I was sitting on that one and I kept looking up and going, you not an international clearance yet, mate? No, okay, rubbish, can't use it. So here it is today. But he apparently played very well in that game. They've also brought in Sean Graham now, so you're going to have to add him into the factor of things soon. Look, those sort of matches, you're going to expect Larne to win, but they still have to go and do it. They have the firepower, even with players missing. At Cliftonville, square pegs and round holes left an unconvincing performance, but they leave Solitude with a point. Well done. on the face of it, because looking at the players they had missing, I thought, oh, you're a few key defenders out, you know, and they're still without Want. That's Sean Want. I wasn't being like, you know,
yeah,
big brain on that there without Sean Want. You know, you look at that going into games and one of the best defenders in the league last season isn't available. That's going to cause issues in the same way that people are saying that about Crusaders and Gallagher. So, you know, to be fair to Larne, when we're looking at them, Want was on the bench against Newry, so presumably he's going to be back soon. This is a team that, when they get all their players back, should be flying. And, you know, why shouldn't people be saying, well, Larne have every chance of winning this league again? I think they absolutely do. They've Scott Allen, who didn't look fully up to speed when he played Cliftonville. He got caught for the goal, but he's going to be massive.
He looked a lot more controlling. We spoke in the podcast last week about how when you get a player from that area of the league with that kind of pedigree and you're thinking, what are they doing here? They usually are, wow, they're brilliant, what a great player. Or we're like, oh, that's why they've dropped down. And I think after that Newry game, I saw glances of, oh yeah, he's good. And he's going to do some serious things in this league. Another player I just want to highlight is, he was hyped up to me, and I feel as though I'm going to speak about him a lot as the season goes on. He was hyped up to me by Larne fans, and he did pretty good in that Charity Shield, whatever game that was. And so far, he's really starting to nail himself down into this team. Dylan Sloan, progresses really well from midfield and has got one or two goals this season and came close at times there as well. That's a young player. I think we've seen this Larne team bring in a lot of names, even in the most past few recent days, from outside. It felt as though it was they're finding players from other teams, and that's what you do when you want to grow. It feels like Sloan is one of the first batch of Larne originals, and I'm sure fans will love that more than ever.
There's been a few duds in there too. You know, Westendorf came in, they gave him a couple of goes and went, do you want to go on loan to Ballymena, mate?
I'll say, this was interesting. It's one of the things that really struck a chord with me on the final day of the transfer window. They bring in, I mean, look, they're players from lower leagues in England. They bring in Westendorf and they bring in Omar, and they've clearly decided they've seen what they've needed to see and they've moved on very quickly.
Yeah, so that shows you the ruthlessness in it. It might just suggest either they don't think they're ready or they think they need a bit more time. He'll probably get that time at Ballymena United. Let's see what happens there. Westendorf, and obviously wish him well, but that's just, to me, an indication of how Larne are serious. You know, Larne are serious. You can't go in and coast. People go, Kenny Bruce, money, happy days, I'm going to go in here. Oh, do you hear what happened to him? So your man went down there, didn't work out, and he was out the door before he, you know, had a chance to blink. So come in here ready or don't bother. You know, we're not here just to make you slightly more financially well off, lads. I like that about them. I think that that's needed at that level, and that's, you know, the sort of mentality that allowed them to go win the league last season. Larne are going to be there and thereabouts, and as I say, that game, it's going to be on BBC Two, Larne against Linfield. Bring it on. Let's see what they've got, because I was down, I did the Larne Linfield game at the end of last season when Andy Ryan scored the absolute worldie, and then Larne had their party afterwards. You know, the title was wrapped up, and that was just the coronation night, as it were. And to be fair, a few Linfield fans stayed back to watch that, which, you know, if it was my team, I couldn't think of anything worse than staying there to watch someone else lift the trophy that we had the season before. But I thought that was actually a really classy thing for those guys to do. Now, plenty of people piled out, and I'm not judging them. I'd have been one of them. I really think I probably would have been. But I thought, fair play to those that stayed behind. So somewhere in the psyche, you're going there and thinking, when we were here last, they were lifting the league. Don't want that again. And that could just lead to a nice, spicy night.
I want fireworks, forget spice, I want it all. They kick off, and that's what I thought was going to happen at the game I was at on Saturday between Glenavon and Ballymena. The game which I feel like I've been to more than any other reporting. It's a game which is never boring, and you'll probably appreciate this from a man who's done bits for media like far longer than I have. I have my book in front of me, and as I looked through my little halftime report, I just decided to cut a few things out to make sure I was nice and tight for time. And one of the lines I had where this is a feisty game and very rarely does this end with 22 players on the pitch. I did not say that, but as 5 minutes into that second half, Mikey Place brings down a player, gets his second yellow, he's off, and I'm thinking I could have sounded so smug and great in the radio, but I missed my chance. But these are regrets, and I'm sure Mikey Place and plenty of other Ballymena players had a few after Saturday. That was a game with plenty of vigour, and there was some feisty tackles, there was some not so clean tackles, and there was plenty of dark arts mixed in. It wasn't the most free-flowing game of football, but I just love watching these two teams play because anything can really happen. It ends 1-0. A huge lift, a huge weight of pressure off Gary Hamilton's shoulders, at least for another week, as he creates a bit of space between his side and a team now rooted at the bottom of the league. And for Ballymena, they actually had their chances. And oftentimes we'll talk about how teams start playing better once they're down to 10 men. They just had a bit more flow and fluidity about them. And look, after the game, I think I totaled 13 yellow cards and 2 reds, because then Glavin wanted to get in on it and they got themselves 2 yellows for Aaron Rodgers. Ballymena manager Jim Irvin criticised what he felt was a bit of an inconsistency by the referee on the yellows. There was very few yellows where I went, what's going on there? In fact, there was a few players where I'm thinking, when is he going to get a yellow? Because the amount of, like, little, you know, pulling on the shirt.
That's the weird thing, because I was feeling that watching the Carrick-Dungannon game, going, where are the yellow cards? Yeah. At times, there was a couple of challenges that should have been yellow cards, and I would very rarely say he has to book them or anything like that. I don't like to pass too much comment on those sort of things, apart from when it just seems obvious that, you know, what is going on. And I have spoken to, without going into maybe too much detail here, I've spoken to several referees this week, in the last week, I suppose, the way we are now. But in the last week, I've spoken to several referees. I've left a voicemail for a couple of others. And the thing I want to get is, what are you being told? And I'm going to meet at some stage with Mike Riley again and have that conversation again, because I know what he told me. He told me that, for example, time wasting should be a yellow card. And then people are interpreting time wasting, and then we're seeing articles and papers appear saying the referee interpreted it wrong and bad referee. If his boss is telling him he has to do it, the minute he thinks it is, he's going to show that card. If you don't tell him that he has to do it, he might just go, ah, I'll leave it. So we're seeing some games where referees are using a lot of discretion, where you're thinking, wow, like Ethan McGee body checked somebody, has no intention to play the ball, it's a yellow card, it's a professional foul, he's deliberately trying to slow things down to break it up for his team and help his defence out, but he doesn't get booked. And then in another game, half of that, and it's, you know, everyone, or it's even just someone does that and it gets booked and keeps happening. So I want there to be a greater consistency. I think it's difficult for fans to accept that there's new directives, but only certain officials apply them as stringently as what is being suggested they should. It just doesn't make it enjoyable. I don't want to go to a game and think, should that be a card? I mean, ultimately, who really cares? Who wants to be going to a football match and going, well, do you know what the problem today was? There just wasn't enough yellow cards.
Well, I'll tell you what.
But you want to know what a yellow card is.
You
and
do.
It's not obvious anymore. Apart from, you know, a really bad tackle. There are tackles now where you're thinking, that's soft and he's being booked and I don't want that. And then there's tackles that other refs are letting go. So can someone just definitively tell us where the standard is? Have you made it stricter or not? Are they allowed discretion or not?
Michael Clark is currently asking the world, what is art? Tell me what is art.
Exactly.
It is such a...
I'm exacerbated by it. Because if behind the scenes, referees are telling me that they don't know what they're doing.
So is this a leadership thing? Is this where you have... You know, we talk about a team and the manager trying to get their ideas on it. Is it a case of it's a lot of things all at once?
Maybe. What I need to explain, because this confuses people and I understand why, Mike Riley will take all the flack. It comes, you know, above him to IFAB say we want these things. The Premier League have them at the moment. There's loads of things wrong with the Premier League. The officiating in the Premier League this season's got worse. The VAR decisions are just ridiculous at times, plainly ridiculous. Our officials don't have the luxury of VAR and are being held to, you know, this high level of scrutiny. So yes, we should be able to criticise our officials, but we should also understand how much of it is being how much of it is what they think they're being asked to do? And my question, before I can really point the finger of blame to either the referees or Mike Riley, as the head of refereeing in Northern Ireland, is this what you're asking them to do? So I need that answer. So then I can say, okay, well, you might seem a bit confused, but you're just not following instruction very well. Or why is he asking you to do that? Because that's a distinction that I think supporters should have an understanding of too. If everything's stricter, whether we like it or not, you'll soon come to understand it because everyone's doing it. But if some aren't, are they wrong to apply a level of discretion? Most people want the discretion, but is their boss wanting that? I know that's quite nuanced.
Is it consistency for you, or is it a focus on particular aspects of the rules over others?
So there's two things. There's the consistency. It's very hard to say what time wasting is because there's so many different ways you can waste time. I've seen enough football in the days that followed the game at Glentoran against Crusaders where other officials have gone, have all the time you want, lads. So maybe they are allowed to do that, but the question is, did the referee at the time feel he had that option? The other thing that's become a real bugbear, and I am ranting, but the other thing that's a real bugbear is what's going on in the technical areas where they're stripping passion out of football. You absolutely should not ever be abusive to a match official. That's easy. That's obvious. If someone stands up and swears at you, they should be booked. Don't think about it. Caution them. Easy. I have spoken to a physio who was told off for treating a player who was injured because he didn't ask for permission. I have been told by someone who was in a coaching capacity, they got up to pass a message on to somebody who was standing up and they were immediately yellow carded for leaving their seat. Now, are coaches not allowed to coach anymore? What do you want them to do? Text each other from 3-4 feet away when it's loud and people maybe aren't catching the attention, you know, of their colleagues immediately? They might be anecdotal, but you look at, and it was said on the radio a few weeks ago, it was actually said on The Score as well last week, the Newry City manager said that when they scored their first goal of the season against Carrick Rangers that they were told off because everybody got up and celebrated on the bench, the first goal under the new boss.
Yeah.
Well,
none of us want that. The reason why we're asking people to stay seated is because of what Roma did. That was the straw that broke the camel's back, and the behaviour of Jose Mourinho, which they were punished for, in the European final, the Conference League final, because nobody wants that in football. We don't want people being abusive. We don't want people hounding referees. We don't want people waiting for them after games. That's all common sense. That's fine. Book them for that and send them off if they do it again. But you should be able to turn around and question a decision. You should be able to, within reason, and you should be able to get up to put an ice pack on someone or to say, do you not think we should fire an extra man into defence because we're going to win if we can shore this up?
The one man standing up thing it's the most pedantic
it doesn't help. Why should it be one man standing up? Because you see the rule about crowding referees, there's no definitive number. That's according to Mike Riley when I interviewed him when he came in to his job. I asked him, is it 2, is it 3, is it 4, you know, nod when the answer is yes. And he said, no, it's if the referee just feels, you know, it's intimidating, the behaviour is aggressive or anything untoward, that can be, you know, one person can crowd you if they approach you the wrong way. Which, I mean, again, I agree with, because one person being aggressive is one person being aggressive too many.
Yeah, I hear you.
So that's fine. But if someone's getting up to go, yes, we've scored, and you're going, well, would you sit down? You expect them to say, oh, sorry, I was having fun. I mean, what is the point? And that is a big bugbear of mine where, I mean, it'll probably be the thing that kills me, but I am just going to keep complaining about it until somebody comes and says, sorry, we're going to change it. They can't keep doing that to people that just want to be at football, because we're saying criticism of referees is driving referees away. Imagine not being able to enjoy being in the dugout. Then what's the point?
You've made your impassioned point very, very clearly, and it's no doubt a topic that we will come back to both on your podcast, The Score, and here on the podcast. And if both teams perhaps view the referee as the villain on Saturday between Glenavon and Ballymena, for the Lurgan Blues, they'll see one man as a brand new hero, I want to shout out Jamie McDonagh, a player they bring in on loan from Cliftonville. We all know about his quality and his ability and what he's been able to do in this league. He hasn't really showed it in recent seasons, but he showed a lot on Saturday what he can do. I thought he was such a great creative spark for Glenavon, and he could have created one or two goals. He was the man that provided the corner in. Oftentimes an uncredited skill and ability to bring to a team, swinging in from set pieces. And another player I want to highlight for Glenavon, it's an area of the pitch where they've been struggling. They didn't get a huge amount of striker reinforcements. They bring in Opong, who didn't get on the pitch. I thought Jackson Nesbitt, who they brought in from Mid Ulster League, really led the line very, very well. They're not a team who's blessed with a whole lot of out-and-out strikers, but they're going to somehow make it work. They only get the one goal. They nearly were made to pay for it as Ballymena powered on, but a few things for Ballymena. They've got no points, ain't great. They haven't scored in, what, four games, I think, now. They've only scored two goals. Three red cards in six games. That is not a way to get victory. I know five of those six games have been against top six sides. We've talked about it lots. But this was one of those big games, and they're going to become bigger and bigger when they do eventually face against Loughall and Carrick and Dungannon and Newry. These are going to feel even bigger games, and you are totally... You're at the bottom of the slope trying to go upwards when you're so far away. Even now, you know, Loughall have got, what, 8 points on them now, you know? So when they come together, they're going to be huge. So not the easiest start for Jim Irvine, but he's brought players in. Cahir Friel is one of them, and Westendorf is another one. So perhaps they will be the answers to their lack of goal-scoring prayers. We're sitting here recording in the past, but in our current present, we have the fixtures for the first round of games in the League Cup. I always feel like when these come around, like the season's finally getting going, the motor's running, and we have a whole load of fixtures that'll be played on Tuesday, the 3rd of October. I'm just going to list them. Loughall play Ballyclare, Cliftonville go against Institute, Anna host Port Stewart, Limavady against Dundella. Limavady, who can't stop scoring all of the goals all the time. That'll be a great test for them because they're doing so well in the Premier Intermediate, a championship team in Dundella. That'll be a fascinating fixture there. Carrick host Moyola, Coleraine host Bangor, Welders against Newry, Ballinamallard against Ards, Glenavon against Derby, the Point Crusaders go down to Worm Point, Ballymena host Lismore Distillery, it's Lorne Knockbreda, a Portadown against Cook United, Dungannon against Newington, Linfield against Queens. We know what happens in the cup between those two teams. And Dollingstown against Glentoran. Oh, I'm trying to think here. Do we have seedings in this part of the competition? Because it looks as though there is a total of zero All Premiership games there. But a few interesting ones, like Crews going down to Worm Point. Like I said, I quite like the Limavady Dundella game. Outside of that, a couple of even fixtures and some not so even.
Yeah, fair enough. It's the early stage of the competition where every result will be almost exactly as you expect.
A manager crisis will happen after they get beat by some lower team, no doubt. Other things that are going on is Northern Ireland's games. They're dropping like flies, Michael. Where are we going to get all these players to play? We're losing one every hour, it feels like. These games feel... still like they're a big deal. I think a lot of Northern Ireland fans, their hope has withered away with the way the results have been going. But wins against Kazakhstan and against Slovenia, it could be party town. Who's going to score the goals to get them? I don't know. But assuming we still have 11 players to play, these are still big games.
They are. Well, yeah, they're European qualifiers. They're hugely important matches. The campaign itself has been very disappointing because 1-0 seems to be the score every time out. Bar the opening win against San Marino, Northern Ireland haven't been scoring and they've been conceding. Well, they can talk about goals disallowed by VAR, I suppose, but the Kazakhstan game at Windsor Park was a particularly disappointing one. Johnny Evans comes off through injury. Anyone left on the pitch momentarily forgets how to defend, and the guy that we're saying, Imbatov, he's a dangerous player. Let's see what he can do. He's the one player with a wee bit of flair, comes off the bench, scores the goal, and incredible scenes, to be fair, for the very small number of people that made that massive journey from Kazakhstan over in the far corner. But for the rest of us, an absolute sickener. And it's just kind of how the campaign's been. The last two 1-0s are very different because you lose 1-0 away to Denmark in Copenhagen, no disgrace there. And that with a goal which feels cruelly chalked off after VAR spent 4 minutes looking at the wrong thing before showing us the right thing, and why they went, well, Johnny Evans's elbow or whatever it was. Well, it can't be your elbow, but you know what I mean, being facetious. He was slightly offside. So, okay, fine. His heel was slightly offside. The goal doesn't stand. But Michael O'Neill admitted to me the other day that he thinks they were still feeling a bit sorry for themselves, and it carried into the Kazakhstan game. And they just didn't really get going. They had a couple of chances, but it's just where the goal's coming from. That is the big boggle. It does not help. We are not blessed with enough players that we can have 4, 5, 6 injured and just expect to go and win games. We are absolutely not in that position. So, you know, we need to be mindful of that. And we had, Jordan Thompson was playing in left wing back kind of role against Kazakhstan. That didn't work out. He was out of position. Let's see what they do. There was a little hint that they might even consider deploying Paul Smith in a wing back role at some point if required, because he's done a bit
of that. He's back and he's playing out of position. Let's go.
He's done a wee bit of it for QPR, but yeah, I mean, I don't think that's how they'll start, but it's an option if they want to do that. Slovenia away, just to me, isn't looking like a game where you should be hugely optimistic. I'm sorry, we're coming up against Benjamin Sesko. Like, he's an incredible striker. Are we going to be able to limit him? And who's going to be breaching the back line of Slovenia? Who, well, if they want to call upon him, I'll have Jan Oblak. So, I'm going to have to sit and do my homework the next couple of days and look at the Slovenia squad. But I don't feel overly optimistic. I'm hoping this is one of those times, though, because as a Northern Ireland fan, I rarely am. I hope this is one of those times where I'm like, nah, I'm not expecting anything, and they surprise me.
Of course.
But I don't know. I just don't know. And Kazakhstan on Sunday, they've been absolutely superb. You know, they are not a wonderful football team. It's not like you're going, wow, it's like Brazil from the 70s. That's not what you're getting from Kazakhstan. They have a style. It ain't pretty, but it's been darned effective. They've had an amazing qualifiers. And what gives us the right to think that we're going to stop them at this stage?
I felt there's something about that game and that goal that they scored past Northern Ireland where I felt this is how it feels to be all those teams that got beat by Northern Ireland. This is what it felt like to be Greece, and this is what it felt like to be England and Spain. Not that we are the same distance, you know, quality-wise to Kazakhstan. And look, the Kazakhstan thing has been bubbling along, and they felt as though they had the chance, and they've got the results while we haven't. But we go into this now without Shane Lavery and Dale Taylor. I don't really know how much. Maybe Lavery probably could have been a player who could have been in contention for a starting berth. We're without Davis. We're without Dallas, have been for ages. Corey Evans is all long-term out. Bradley looks like he potentially is out for the season. Jamal Lewis is crocked. Donnelly's unavailable for the squad. So, and now, potentially, Daniel Ballard is now out. Were they going to bring these players in? I'm sure there'll be plenty of other call-ups, but I don't know if I could tell you off the top of my head. I think this has been like this for the while, but I couldn't tell you right now off the top of my head what the Northern Ireland team would be. But perhaps they, not being under pressure and building around the likes of Price and around players like that, it's just you're hoping that that this is the start of something where we're betting in the roots.
Yeah, I mean, it might not be too different from the team that played the last time. We'll wait and see. But it's just, you know, 3 points from 4 games. It makes for a grim reading compared to Kazakhstan and Finland, who are both 9 points from their first four. Denmark are third in the group at the moment, as many points as Slovenia, and that's 7. So our only win so far has come against San Marino. And that might be, you know, the case come the end of it. I hope not, because after this we've the majority home games, so you know that gives us an opportunity to maybe pick up a few more points. But we've been beaten at home by Finland, we've been beaten at home by Kazakhstan, so you know, how optimistic are you going to be playing at home against Slovenia and Denmark? I don't think they're particularly easy games. So, yeah, it's a difficult campaign. Michael O'Neill was brought in. The mood has completely changed because when he came in, he was brought in on the basis of people didn't believe at the IFA that Ian Barraclough was going to be good enough to get them through this group. But Michael O'Neill was. I would say that quite similar to what has happened to Barraclough, he has had his fair share of injuries. And we're in that, you know, it's a horrible excuse, nearly transition stage, but we're looking for that next generation of players to come in. We're still hanging on and hopeful that the Kings of Leon can continue to be heroes, and maybe it shouldn't be a surprise that in their mid-30s they're picking up injuries and they're less available than they used to be. Not all of them, but some of them, and that's just where we're presently at.
But at least we do have Shea Charles, Hume and Ballard, we're probably going to hope are key cogs, you know, for the long-term future. You've got secret agent Peacock Farrell out in Denmark trying to get in as much Scandinavian information as he possibly can. So it's not all doom and gloom, and Conrad Menemans pretty much started every game for a very resilient and buoyant St Mirren side. Yeah. And I think he potentially could be pushing for a starting place this weekend at some point. And
that was the thing.
We've got Manchester United's Johnny Evans in the team, my man.
This is it. The thing that surprised me was the injuries that were announced and the players that have come in. If you're Lee Bonus, you're probably thinking, I've had a pretty good start to the season. You know, could you not have thrown me in there? Would I not have offered something a bit different in terms of physicality? That's the one thing I'm not going to pretend I should be the international manager or anything like that, far from it, but that's the one where I'm looking and thinking, would him or a Joel Cooper added a bit of something to this team? And I understand if, in Michael O'Neill's head, they're sixth or seventh or eighth choice strikers, that's fine if that's his opinion, but wouldn't it be better bringing them in than more midfielders or defenders? That's how I would look at it anyway. I think we need a wee bit of inspiration, we need a wee bit of luck. I would love us to somehow shock Slovenia and then travel to Kazakhstan thinking, well, if we can beat Slovenia, we can beat Kazakhstan, and all of a sudden things are feeling good come the Belfast games, and me strutting into Windsor Park thinking, the sun is out, the performances are coming, let's go, boys. He said 5 from 6, we can do it.
Michael, if you've got any kind of voice on Monday, that would be disappointing. We all want you to be the man that does the amazing goal. And it's a fifth for Northern Ireland as they knock it in. An interesting couple of games, and I think we'll all sit there with bated breath hoping that the revolution can start right now, this weekend. But looking ahead to this weekend, an interesting setup because of all the fixtures, under-21s and the international, all that type of stuff. We've only got 3 in the league. We do, though, have 2 teams playing away in this fancy pants or not so fancy Scottish Challenge Cup, where Cliftonville have got to go to Raith Rovers. And Hamilton are coming over. I'm glad. I don't think if we had like a home fixture for any of these teams just yet. But yeah, Hamilton are going to Coleraine. It's not like I'm expecting you, and I don't have any knowledge of the Scottish leagues where I can tell you how good or bad Raith Rovers are. But it'd be nice if our teams got some sort of results here, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, how seriously are we taking this competition? I would love to know. I think it's one of those ones where publicly you say it's great to test ourselves against some great Scottish sides and really see where we're at.
Well, Hamilton are the current holders, so says Wikipedia. So Coleraine have got a tough test.
Well, they do, and we know Hamilton are decent anyway. That's where Andy Ryan came from. We've seen recent players from their squad come into the league.
In fact, Raith Rovers were in that final that they lost to, so hey. More facts, you know, they're going to be some big upsets.
This was called like the Tunnocks Tea Cake Cup or something at one stage.
Yes, it was, and now it's Iron Brew. So.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Of course it is. I don't know how the sponsor really impacts it, but...
Of course it is. Like, what would be the Northern Ireland?
Have to go it's potato, isn't it?
It is. Just the most root one. Who will we get to sponsor this? What does everyone think we drink? Ta-da! Yeah. It's so brilliant. They may as well call it the Kilty McKilt Cup. It's just I don't care about it. I'm not going to pretend to care about it. I doubt those teams care about it. And I would suggest that if Hamilton and Raith was your finalists, yeah, never mind.
So it's all in Cliftonville.
Best of luck. Have a great time.
Corey and
have a great time.
Great time.
Have a great time with your mates.
Well,
nobody cares.
A man who seems to be having a great time over his little jaunt to Northern Ireland. I don't know if he has been in Northern Ireland before the past week. I just want to do a quick hit because you were chatting to this much talked about Michael Smith,
yeah,
who is now majority shareholder in Carrick Rangers. You had a big chat with him on your podcast, The Score. What did you make of him? Clearly, he has passion for the game of football. I don't think we've got a huge amount of details about what this investment is and what these strategies are. He's keeping that very close to his chest. But in a week where we don't know anything about these Korean investors, it's all been reported rather than them coming out and saying, hello, I'm such and such, and this is what I'm going to do. I know they're saying that they're going to go full-time and they want to win it by 2027. I'll say this about Michael Smith. He's come out. He's done interviews with you. He's done interviews with loads of people. He's met the fans. He has been very front-facing, which is kind of a rarity and is something I didn't really expect from him, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I mean, not to be too general, but you know, with a Korean investment, a couple of local lads just thinking, you know, we'll just get in and try and do our best and keep our heads down. It feels very Northern Irish, and in many ways, I don't blame them. An American businessman not being shy to answer questions from journalists also doesn't surprise me. He's the chief information officer of the Estée Lauder company, so office based in New York. Do you know what? I was just waiting to see whether he was the stereotypical soccer ball yee-haw or whether he actually had a notion about what our league was and what we love about it. And he was definitely the latter. Was able to talk to me a bit about the Irish Cup, about the format, you know, for qualification, European football, something he liked. And he'd looked at Central America.
Yeah, he said
was
that.
Was something he said to me, which I thought was interesting. Because, look, I assume he's gone, I have X dollars to spend. What does that get me? And him and, you know, a few people have sat down and said, well, here's some of the options. And they've connected him with Carrick Rangers. The funny thing was nobody at Carrick Rangers thought he might be fake.
That's one thing. I'm like, how does that happen, like, email-wise? Yeah. Like, how does that, like, hello, I would like to invest. You know, it's not like Football Manager.
Give me your club, please.
Yes, can I have one club?
That sounds lovely. Can we have all your money? Yes, you can.
Like,
that, ta-da!
You know, that's like, working in kind of music industry stuff, I get emails all the time where it's like, oh, you know, we did something with this and we're going to do that. And you're like, well, why are you emailing me then?
Oh,
you know,
hugely.
You know, dear insert band name here, you know, dear football team, I would like to invest in you.
I know.
So dear Carrick Rangers.
It felt like that. It felt like one of those hoax emails where all you have to do is give us your bank details and I swear the money's just going to drop. So it sounded that way. It isn't that way. He really likes the sport, played it himself up to university level. He was a left back. Read into that what you want. I'd say all the best people were. But he just really seems to get it. He's gone to a couple of games. He's been speaking to supporters. He's been very front-facing, and he's not, I don't think he's going to come in and open the checkbook and sign half the league or anything like that. I think it's more so a case of incremental investments, and he keeps saying about being a little bit better. And to me, between the lines, I'm thinking, set your expectation levels as, you know, this isn't going to happen overnight. But he says he wants to leave a legacy. He's in it for the long haul. So let's see what his staying power is like. You know, does he change his mind and want to sell up after having his head wrecked for a couple of years of the Irish League?
That was my favourite quote from the interview. It's like, when I die.
Yeah.
I want the people of Carrick Fergus to know that I change it. So obviously he's got a notion for a wee statue outside Taylor's Avenue, for sure.
Well, if Carrick Rangers win the league, I'll personally finance it. No, I won't. And why am I saying that on a podcast? Someone will point to that. I'll help crowdfund it.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably, whatever, yeah, crowdfunding, yeah, is at that time. Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
We'll do that.
But you never know. We could have a brand new big two. It could be Carrick against Coleraine.
What I would say is, just in terms of his character, I spent an hour with him. We sat, we did have a coffee and a bit of a chat, and we talked about life and family stuff outside of it. And I found him to be a very approachable, nice guy. He's highly intelligent, and he seems like quite a shrewd businessman. So he's not doing this to get filthy rich. Speak to other investors, stroke owners in the league. You know, you don't do it to turn a big profit, but he just wants to have a fun project. He's got enough money at this stage in his life. He wants to try and do something, and this is where he's decided to do it. So best of luck to him, and Well, here's hoping it works out.
I haven't talked a lot about the championship this year. I know you haven't seen a whole load of championship games, but I'll just hit you up as you were at a Portadown game against the Welders, that for a lot of people consider them the two favourites going into the league. Neither are sitting right at the tippy top of the league right now, but that was a third loss in a row for Portadown. They've started this, 5 games they've played so far, 1-2, lost 3.
Yep.
Doesn't sound like a particularly sterling performance from them. Are Portadown fans getting a bit antsy and worried?
I think they are. There was a few of them booing, most certainly, at full time. Two teams that came into the game with similar records because they'd won their first two and then failed to win their next two. A draw and a loss if you're the Welders, and 2 defeats if you're Portadown. And the Welders won this one 1-0 with a penalty, which did look to be a penalty for handball inside the box. Portadown didn't create as many chances, didn't look particularly cohesive, looked a wee bit out of ideas, and towards the end, I would say, lacked the fight that I would expect from an Al Curry team. I was more worried about that than anything else, where at times people who have enough experience were looking to other people who have enough experience and sort of going, do you want to go get that? You know, are you going to chase him? Are you going to do that? Instead of just grabbing the game by the scruff, which I would expect more of them, it's a very disappointing start. I mean, they're 9th after 5 games. They're tipped as one of the favourites. They probably have, well, you would assume, based on who they've brought in, have one of the biggest spends in the league, and they haven't got the return for it yet. Now, that can all change, but the Welders, without being remarkable, were the better team, posed the greater questions, were frustrated a number of times by Gareth Buchanan, who from Portadown was very good and did a great job, but in the end, the Welders were the winners, and up to 3rd and 2 points behind Newington and Dundella presently, who sit above them.
Newington, top of the league, wow.
Played 5-1-4, Newington, yeah.
Hey, could we see double winners in Inver Park? Is that what we're going to have? They're going to have to... that's the where champions play.
Crazy performance from them, from what I've heard as well. You know, they went and put the sword to Anna United, so excellent from Newington. It's early. I'm not looking at Newington as the favourites, but time will tell, that old adage. But if you're a Portadown fan, you probably don't need me to tell you that it's not where you thought you would be at this time of the year.
With all those games being played, we've only got 3 in the league, and they're mainly focused down at the bottom, and some big games they are. Off the back of that loss to Glenavon, they're going to be searching for their first win of the season again, and they're going up to Taylor's Avenue to do it. Carrick against Ballymena. They used to be the old enemy for Ballymena. Carrick have been the epitome in up and down. This would be a brilliant feather in the cap of Jim Irvine going back to Carrick and getting his first win there. It would be like the last thing that Stuart King would want, particularly in the situation he is in. This all depends on how Ballymena react. I know they've been reacting to all these games, but they're going to be without Mikey Place now. Carrick are getting the motor running, even if it's starting to chug a wee bit. Do you feel strongly about either side here? I think at the minute, until I see Ballymena knocking them in, and I think if both goals come, well, one came late against Crusaders, and the other one was a snatch and grab header from a set piece, from a free kick header from Colin Coates, so it's not like the two goals came properly from open play. I'm going to have to favour Carrick here.
Yeah, you would certainly favour Carrick. Home advantage and better start to the season. We don't know the result at the time that we're speaking, but I would assume Jim Irvine's got his first win against Knockbreda.
That's true, actually. Yeah.
And so if he has that win, can they take a wee bit of that feeling into this game against Carrick Rangers? I mean, if they've lost by the time you listen to this against Knockbreda, I firmly believe Carrick Rangers will win this game, and God help those Ballymena players. But I'm expecting Ballymena to go into this game having got their first win of the season, feeling a wee bit better.
Against the bottom team in the championship.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that'll make it all the more interesting. Stuart King was at the Glenavon Ballymena United game after the Carrick Rangers match because it was the next day. So he's had them scouted in his next 2 games, Ballymena and Glenavon in the league. So he's had a chance to do a bit of a double daunter there. But I don't know why. I just, part of me thinks Ballymena might get something against Carrick. Traditionally, you know, they'd be expected to. At the moment, they're not. But say they go and win, they would have not a dissimilar record this season as they did after the same amount of games last season under David Jeffrey. So, and that would have been this time around after playing all the big teams. Did they, you know, they lost 1-0 against Glenavon away from home. Is that a massive disgrace? Should we, you know, probably not. Had that been a home game, would they have got a point even out of that? Could we be looking at this slightly differently? So Ballymena really, really, really need to get something here. And it could be the moment their whole season turns around if they were to do it. But yeah, I favour Carrick Rangers at the moment.
I'm probably going to go for 2-0 here. I think it's probably going to be tight. It probably would be tight anyway, but for Carrick, it's about getting the goal and trying to coast to the end. A fixture which recent history doesn't tell me that it's been favourable to Glenavon. They go to Stanmore Park to try and rack up these points now. Two without a loss for Glenavon, and they'll not want to let Dungannon start to, well, firstly overtake them with a win, but even start to get close to them as they try to edge away from this this dreaded bottom two. I think we've all talked about how well Dungannon have performed in patches. They haven't been able to put together in one big performance. I think, particularly at home, I think this is where they do it. I think Dungannon are going to get their first win. I'm going to say 2-1 to Dungannon. Adding in a bit of blood here, new blood, and I think it'll be a close game, but I think Dungannon will finally edge it. Now, they might not score until the 106th minute, but I still think they'll get it somehow.
What they want to do is concede in the first minute, yeah, so absolutely, that they learn that they actually have to start trying to play. Uh-huh. Because the longer they leave it to concede, the later they have to come back. The thinking here for me is towards Glenavon, actually. I think Gary Hamilton, and understandably, has come under a massive amount of pressure. We've seen a bit of a response, maybe not surprisingly, timed around Conor McCluskey coming back into the team, and they've made a couple of good additions that you've already alluded to. Not to say that Dungannon haven't, but I would just fancy Glenavon here to start putting some results together. And I'm not saying they're going to be comfortable. I don't think Glenavon know how to do comfortable half the time. But I think that they'll squeak by this by an odd goal.
Odd goal, I think, is how this will be decided. For Newry, if they're going to get a victory against Glentoran at home, you've got to think it's going to be by a squeaky odd goal. We've talked about how Glentoran aren't free-flowing, at least by putting the ball in the net. I think right now they're, will they be able to welcome back Bobby Burns into the side? Marshall came back there and slotted in the midfield with Sule and Shane McCartan, who looks like their best player at the minute for Glentoran. It'll be about stopping them for Newry, and we'll hope for a better day than they'd had against Lorne. I've looked at some of these tricky games so far this season for Glentoran, where they're going away and it could be a situation where they're under pressure to get the goal and it drags on for a bit, and so far they've been able to step up and get and answer that test and get the points, and I think that's going to happen the same way again. I think Glentoran will go into this strong and will get the points here. I know it's not a bold prediction here, but I think in previous times you'd say this is a potential banana skin on a Saturday night at 5:30 going down to Newry. They don't score after 50 minutes, panic sets in. I don't think that's going to be the case.
Newry's home games so far in the league this season: lost 3-0 to Loughall, lost 3-0 to Cliftonville, lost 4-0 to Crusaders. They haven't scored at home yet, and they now welcome Glentoran.
One of the most resilient and physically imposing defences in the league.
So, you know, I don't even know if I need to finish my point. I think it speaks for itself. It's not to be incredibly damning on Newry City. It's just, it's another game where the Loughall game is a different story. The other teams have kind of shown what you would expect when the bigger clubs go down to Newry City. They find it difficult, and probably so they should. And I think that's going to be what happens here, that the big fancy team from Belfast goes down and has an enjoyable tea time kickoff. I think Glentoran will win by 2 or 3 goals.
Excellent. All in preparation to sit there the next day and have a bit of Michael Clark in their lives on the international stage. Michael, it has been a pleasure, as it always is, to have you on the podcast. You are highly requested for, and I know every time you're on, people love to hear you chat, and this episode delivered, my friend. Thank you so much for
number
coming
50
on.
Well done. Nope, you
thank you very much. For yourself, I'm sure you're like maybe 10 times that amount, because
I've lost track.
Sure you have.
I haven't a clue. I have barely an idea what day it is at the moment. I've been doing like 3 games a week and a day job. I am just
on a podcast on a run
and a podcast and whatever else
on your own.
I know. And then for some reason thinking I can be like a footballer and go play football and play 2 or 3 times a week. I played football. Here's a fun one to leave it on. I played football with a group of lads that I haven't seen in years the other day. Well, one of them I would see frequently, but the other ones I haven't seen in ages. And he said, "Look, come down and, you know, we need a ringer."
We need a ringer,
and I am the ringer. I mean, just there's a fair chance I'll say yes to a game of football. I'm like that. So I went down, and it's the first time in my life, I was laughing about this with Colin Coates. I was like, it's the first time in my life where I felt like the best footballer by a mile. Because we play football.
Yes, we do.
And, you know, we all know where each other's at and all that, you know, in terms of our group. But when I went down and played football with these lads, some of them were going, "Wow, you play regularly." That was a wow.
Do they still like have a nickname that you had like 15 years ago? They're like, "Oh, what about the MC?"
You know, can I be honest? I've always been Michael Clark. I don't know. I don't get nicknamed. I get full named. I have a middle name. People leave that alone. Yeah. But I get.
But you've
Michael
never
Clark.
Been like Mickey or Clarky,
no.
Or
I've never liked my first name being abbreviated at all. Some of the older boys, you know, like first, second year of school, sixth formers, when I was trying to like be cool and play football with them, they were like Clarky, whatever. And very briefly, not that this would ever catch on, I was getting called Rivaldo because I once lobbed a sixth former in a football match. And everyone was like, "That's the most outrageous thing we've ever seen. Like, your first year, what are you doing dinking the goalkeeper?"
What an era.
And I'm like, I'm a legend, obviously. So Rivaldo, they quickly realised I wasn't Rivaldo.
The Carrick Rivaldo. I'll tell you what, if people need to picture Michael Clark on the 5-7 side pitch, he is maybe late stage Rivaldo, because yeah. You are Perlo-esque.
Thank you.
You're a distributor and you're an organiser and... you definitely give it stacks.
Everyone's ears are worse off. That's what I have always loved in football, is getting the ball, finding the pass. But the problem I always had in football was I've been this height since I was like early mid-teens. And it's like, you're a big centre half, son, stick your head on it and kick it really far. And I didn't get to express myself. Whereas now, in my later years, I'm going playing football with lads that barely know what a football is, are wearing a pair of Vans, and go, "Here, mate, you play twice a week, you're flipping brilliant."
What's really funny about this, I'm just picturing every single like Irish League centre-back as like some sort of like touring artist, where like
yeah.
Colin Coates is like, "Oh, you know what, I could have been a lead singer of a glam rock band, but I had to play a centre-back."
Exactly.
He could have been Paul Heatley, but he was never allowed to express himself because he was too tall.
The best thing that happened to me, and sort of weirdly looking back on it now, is I broke my leg for the second time, because it just made me absolutely give up on trying to chase football as something I could do, and forced me to think about being in the media. And that's been far more successful. I could be plodding around somewhere not knowing that I could talk, and just still screaming on a Saturday morning somewhere freezing cold with no money. Like, so it's all worked out.
I can just imagine you and David Jeffries sharing war stories, yeah. Where it's like, "Oh, you know, I didn't make it at United," and like, "Oh, I couldn't make it into..."
Yeah, Carrick Rangers.
"Knocked them ugly Rovers because of the knee, you know."
Carrick Rangers, Swifts, under 17. Like, what a season.
I think this is the chat that people are going to want to come back to every once in a while. But yes, anyway, The Score NI, that's a podcast that you listen to.
if you're looking
more Irish League stuff. Like I said, you had Michael Smith, you had currently the most beautiful man in Irish League football in Ben Wilson right now. So you can hear, you know what he looks like.
That's his official tag.
Well, he's got gorgeous hair. So he is the most silky man on the pitch. Does he have a silky voice? You'll have to find out. So Score NI, Michael Clark Online, all those things. Sir, till next time. Hopefully I'll have you on once more before episode 100 if I get there. But until next time, cheers.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Never doubt the power of making plans early. Case in point, look at Michael Clark. He had like a game on Friday. Saturday he was covering some stuff. He's got Northern Ireland this week twice. On top of that, he's probably got more games to go to. He's got his own podcast to cover. He had his own podcast last week. I'm sure he had plenty of other things that he wanted to do, like, you know, sleep. But guess what? I booked him early and he felt morally and friendshiply obliged to come here. And I got him here. And all I had to offer him was opinion, chat, and a cup of tea and a few cookies. But he was great, as always. I'm sure he's there battling up with the Around the Grounds boys as the most appearances. I'm sure it's not that hard to count it up, but I just don't have it to hand. But thank you very much if you have been here for all 50. If you haven't, don't worry about it. You know, just go listen to them and help those stats get up, because, you know, if it's out there, it still can count towards my big ego counter. But if you have been here for a while, a long time or a short time, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. I enjoy doing this, and I'm not saying goodbye. I'm just saying we're going to keep rocking and rolling. And if you do enjoy this and you haven't subscribed on any of the platforms that you do, you know you can do that. I've been seeing them creep up. You can do it on Spotify. I'm sure you can do it on some sort of Apple platforms that I don't use, but I know an X percentage of you guys do. I'm sure it's easy, but what's good about it is that it gives you a little notification or a bump to say, hey, he's finally uploaded this week's podcast. So there's something in it for you as well. If you want to follow me on social media, where I'm finding little clips, where they're like another little reminder to let you know that I've got new podcasts out, you can do that. It's at Kicking Match on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And of course, I'm pointing at my smart speaker. It doesn't know that because it is an inanimate object. But if I said to it, hey, smart speaker, it's got a different name, please play Kicking Match on RC Podcast, you know what it would do? It would do it. And I'm not going to do it for you now. Right. Until next time, enjoy the limited amount of games. Until then, tally ho.